This is the Comedy Kiosk, podcast by Monday and Munoz. Please welcome Monday and Munoz.
Welcome to the Comedy Kiosk, a podcast in which we discuss news, opinions, and ideas about comedy. I'm your host, David Munoz, and your other host
is Igor Monday.
And today, our topic is, can comedy save? Save! Save what? Who knows? Igor, this is your idea. Why are we discussing can comedy save and what can it save?
First of all, you know I can make echo in like post-production on the... You don't have to echo yourself. Also, echo doesn't work with like four same words saying at the same exact volume. You have to do it like save.
Okay, Mr. Expert mic handling skills dude. Fair enough.
It's all right. It's not my first rodeo, buddy. Yeah, can comedy save? Well, can comedy save the world? Can comedy save our mood? Can comedy save the situation and so on? Basically, how I came up with this idea and how this topic came to me was thinking about, you know, and actually after listening to one of Bo Burnham's songs, where he talks about, like, you know, is comedy finished? Because now there is so much tragedy in the world that it's kind of not okay or not funny to joke about those things anymore or to talk about those things anymore. But then he flips it to actually, yes, it is, like, I'm the savior of the world because I'm kind of making you laugh instead of cry. And that's the actual dilemma, you know, even for comedians when we're writing our material and there are some current affairs or there are some, you know, taboo topics or fresh developments in terms of some political issues or something like a global pandemic or things, you know, that are quite harmful and hurtful to a lot of people. Should we then talk about it? Should we mention it on stage? Should we joke about it and make fun of it to make things kind of lighter and, you know, to flip it to the kind of let's laugh at it? Or should we just steer clear because the last thing people want is to be reminded of that again and to have that in their mind when they just came for a night of kind of fun and laughter, etc. So let's start maybe with a simple, what is your personal opinion when, you know, when there is some situation like that, do you steer clear of that or do you write about that and do you try to kind of make a joke out of it?
Well, for me, I think the first question is, can I write about it? Not in the sense of, am I allowed? It's like, can I actually think of something funny? Is there something that's grabbing me that's making me go, yeah, that's good, that's good. I'm gonna mention that. If I can't, then that point is moot. You know what I mean? Like, and sometimes maybe it is because at the time I just don't see the funny, or I know there's funny in there and I can kind of see it, but for whatever reason, maybe because it's too close to me or I'm just not feeling the ha-ha funny in it. I can see it, but I'm just not feeling it. And I can't seem to write about it, but I can just say, well, maybe like a couple of months later, it'll come to me. I will then maybe not be so close to the issue. So first off, I think step one, is the comedian too close to it? Because I remember hearing once on this podcast, Let's Talk About Sets. Love this podcast about how to actually write comedy. It was brilliant. For some reason, they just stopped. And I'm wondering if the guys had a falling. There was no like, this is our final episode, nothing. I was like, where the fuck's the rest? Because it was really good. I really enjoyed it. Anyway, so they were talking about how one of the guys was saying that his advice that like a pro, this old guy had given him was basically he'd gone up, he'd done his set and he'd just broken up with a girl and he had his whole set about the breakup, right? And he finished the set. Obviously, it didn't go well. He was still raw and he came down from the stage and he went to the bar with this older comedian was there and he was like this pro. He just killed the room. And he kind of looked at the guy and the guy's like, he's like, so when did it happen? And he's like, a month ago. And he's like, yeah, not yet. He's like, just no, don't do it. No. It's like, you're not ready. And he's like, you have to be in a good place for you to be able to joke about it. If you're not in a good place, it comes through. The crowd can sense that you're not comfortable with this. So I think step number one is, are you comfortable with making jokes about it? If you are, now it's the next step is the audience going to be comfortable with it? That's up to you to decide and whether you want to push the boundaries or not. We've discussed this before when it comes to many different topics like cancel culture and stuff, like can you joke about anything? And we've always said the same thing. It's like, well, yeah, you can, but you've got to own it. Like you either got to decide, I'm going to do it and, you know, whatever the consequences are, I'll have to deal with it. And I'll try to do it the best I can so the consequences are not bad, they're minimal. Or do I just not risk it and go, yeah, maybe not. Yeah, and I think that's up to the individual. I don't agree with getting upset that people are upset by it. People sometimes are justified to be upset. You know, there are some triggering stuff that we can discuss. And I know you have some examples of. We were just discussing it beforehand. For me, that's the main point is, for me, can I find the funny is the first step. If I can, then the rest is deciding how well can I write it that I think that people will enjoy it or not.
That's
my thing.
I agree with that because with a lot of stuff, I always ask myself, like, am I, and I think a lot of comics should do this, but I'm not sure everyone does this. but, yeah. You know, am I good enough to write about this? Like, am I good enough to joke about this? Because if I was sure that I can make a good joke, like objectively a good joke that will get 70% of the people laughing, maybe someone will be personally triggered because they are personally affected by something that I'm talking about. But, you know, if mostly people are going to enjoy it and it's going to be kind of positively received, you know, then okay, but I'm not sure that I can write such a joke on any particular topic. I can on the topics that I'm comfortable with about something that happened to me or something that I just made up or some observation or something. But if we talk about current events, if we talk about diseases, wars, politics, catastrophes and so on, because I remember, when was it? Like 2012 maybe? It's in my mind 2012, but I'm not sure, when that Malaysian Airlines plane kind of disappeared and, you know, like whatever. And I remember that because I wasn't doing comedy then. I started like a couple of years later, but I was watching a lot of stand-up and you know, these kind of panel shows and everything. And it was a very common punchline, you know, kind of just a thing like, yeah, I was supposed to end this tour in Southeast Asia, but I guess, you know, if you never hear from me again, I took Malaysia Airlines or whatever, you know, kind of punchlines. But I don't know how many, like 200 something people were on board in that, and only like years later or whatever they discovered like where it crashed and that everyone on that flight basically, you know, died in that crash and so on. But no one seemed to kind of care or feel sensitive about it or avoid that topic or something. And I remember it was a punch. I mean, even not immediately, but some years later, even things like 9/11 became a punchline for some comedians of some of their sets and jokes and things like that. So, you know, but I always ask myself, you know, first of all, am I good enough to write that joke? And second of all, am I wouldn't say famous enough, but do I have enough merit or do I have enough, you know,
clout.
Yeah, clout. Like that's, you know, for me to say that, because otherwise I'm just another asshole making fun of a horrible situation. But if I'm Jimmy Carr and people paid like $100 to see my show, then probably that means they're okay with my take and my comments on, you know, whatever kind of event. But also I remember, and we mentioned this briefly in kind of preparation for this episode, the pandemic itself. I mean, obviously when it just started, it was kind of a, no one knew how it's going to end or how fast or with how many casualties and all of that. And it was a horrible thing that, you know, happened to the whole world. Luckily, we all also kind of came together as humanity and stayed inside and everything. Well,
Did we really, though?
Well, on paper. And it took some time. And even up to this day,
Statistics might disagree.
Well, yeah. And to this day, I know a lot of people that don't believe it was ever real and that it was all like a plot and whatever. Not to go into all of that, but when it was happening, it was a scary kind of thing and you know, people were dying and everything. But I remember like that I did write material about that because we were in lockdown, we were doing online shows, we were doing Zoom shows with people from around the world and stuff. And I think when you're exposed to news every day, and we were, I was checking the news every day, you know, like, what is the new measure?
Multiple times a day. You're pretty much on your phone.
Yeah, and you were just sharing this with other people, you know, like, now we can't leave, like, we can't move more than 200 meters from a house. Now we can this. Yeah. Oh, it's another week. It's another, there is
no... Oh, look, we made to 10,000. We're in the lead. Yay.
Yeah, and that as well, like, number of deaths, number of, you know, people were following that daily. So, you know, and then when we had a show to talk about that same topic, yeah, maybe it was kind of beating a dead horse, but also why not say the same thing in a funny way and at least we can laugh.
Yeah.
And I remember I had this joke that I wrote during the pandemic and I was really kind of happy with that joke. I stopped using it because it's just not relevant anymore. And we talked about this in one of the other episodes, like the
retiring
expiration date of some kind of current affairs material. But I remember it was basically because someone, I think Trump or someone, was calling it the Chinese virus. And then, you know, everyone was saying kind of, that's not okay. You can't call it the Chinese virus. That's, you know, that's racist. And I was like, well, you know, it's a virus that came from China. No matter how bad it is to label it with a kind of name of a country or nationality, it is a Chinese virus. And basically, you know, why we can use nationality as an adjective for some things, but not for other things. Like, for example, we all call it a French kiss, but no one minds it. You know, it's a French kiss. It's literally called that. You might argue that, okay, it's a good thing, right? Because it's a positive thing, French kiss. But it depends on the context. You know, you just had a date with a lovely girl. Yes, it's a positive thing. You just had a drink with Bill Cosby. Maybe not. You know, so you have something.
Oh, double whammy. You're going with the Bill Cosby as well.
That was relevant.
As the racist China virus.
That was relevant back then. So,
You were stoking multiple fires on that one.
Yeah, but I think that's another thing. Like, you can always make fun of, you know, villains. You can always make fun of something bad, or, you know, because that's, everyone is going to get on board. No one's going to say, like, oh, don't touch that wonderful man. You know what I mean? Like, literally, don't touch that man. But I mean, like, steer clear of that topic. But I mean, you know, but this was, and everyone was talking about such things, you know, where did it come from? Why did it, you know, who ate a bat? This and that, you know, all this kind of things.
Oh, yeah, the bat jokes. So many bat jokes. Did I have a bad joke? No, I can't remember. I don't think I actually had a bad joke. But I had the one about the island of Lesbos and how, you know, because when Venice, like, you know, 2 days of everyone going on lockdown, like less than a week, the whole place all of a sudden, like, the water clears up. There's dolphins in the freaking lake. There's all this sort of shit. And I started making jokes that it was God's way of trying to get us out, that the virus was sent by, you know, God. Because no one wanted to do that, like, angle of, like, because it was affecting everyone recently. And I was mentioning all that and I was saying how God was trying to get it because he didn't want us to hit 8 billion people. And so I was doing the whole island of Lesbos trying to, like, tempt people and stuff like that. And I remember I had, you know, it was fun. It was a funny joke. A lot of got some good laughs out of it, you know, the way it was done and all. And it was never done with a malicious intent, so of course. But, you know, it was kind of making fun of some of the bullheaded people who weren't really, like, paying attention to stuff or, like, you know, denying or whatever. But, you know, That's the thing. Like, and I was like, okay, if one of those people gets annoyed, then you have to think, well, do I care? Do I want to care? Or do I just basically go, well, no, that's fair enough. You can be annoyed at that joke and I just don't care. Like, I think you're wrong. So,
It comes to, like, proper comedy, proper stand-up, and I'm not talking about some, you know, just a random open mic when anyone can go up on stage and, you know, speak their mind, because in that case, you can't really control what people are going to say or who actually thinks that or not. But if we talk about, you know, some kind of level where a comedian's job is to make people laugh and nothing else, like not provide social commentary, share opinions or anything. So, you know, that's, I don't think there's ever any malicious kind of intent, because, you know, people that joke about 9/11 nowadays, for example, have it as a punchline or something. I don't think they're approve of terrorism. I don't think they are happy people died. You know, it's none of that. I think it's just,
no, okay, but they might be making fun of the extremists that did the acts. Sort of.
Yeah, well, that's another thing. That's kind of satire. And, you know, let's make fun of the idiots who thought that they can get away with this. But you know?
Exactly. But then in that way, there is a little bit of maybe malicious intent. You're just being malicious to idiots. And people would be like, well, that's fine. But unless you're one of those idiots, in which case, like, you're part of that group that's being made fun of, you might take offense and be like, hey, we have every right to believe what we want to believe. And you're like, yeah, but you're wrong. You know, there's that. Because I see that a lot now in Twitter, when, especially with the elections coming up in America, and you see the right and left, and each one of the accuses the other one of not having a sense of humor and not being able to write a good joke. And then the ones on the right are doing all this, you know, anti-woke humor. And on the left, they're doing the woke humor, apparently. I don't know, whatever you want to call it. But, like, both sides are saying that they're both, like, taking swings at each other. There is a bit of malicious intent. There is a little bit of, like, I want to make fun of you because I think you're morons. I think, you know, you're either sheep, you've taken the blue pill, red pill, one of the pills, you know, the Matrix shit. You know, it's also that, like, there is some sort of malicious intent. And the whole point is, though, like I said before, like, it's up to you. If you're one of those, I'm sure that they don't care, you know, especially the writers doing the whole, you know, I don't care for your feelings sort of attitude. And the ones on the left are basically like, you're idiots and morons who are just sheep to a cult. And they're just, you know, what is it, the Trump derangement syndromes and this and that. They're just making fun of each other at this point. And they're taking swings and some haymakers at one another. And I think that, in that case, but they've made the choice. They don't care. They don't care what the opposition thinks. And they're banking on it. They're hoping to get a bit of fame from it.
I think in that case, it really there is malicious intent, and there is like selfish and, you know, self gain kind of propaganda or agenda. Sorry, not propaganda, agenda, because you know, they're trying to one up their opponent or just piggyback on someone's opinion or words or whatever. And that I think there is. But when we talk about comedy, you know, bottom line. But I mean, again, I'm talking about comedy as kind of an art form and as an entertainment, type of entertainment. Yeah. I'm not talking about, because a lot of comedians are also preachy, you know, and a lot of like everything, Hollywood is preachy. Like, look at the last 5-7 years of Hollywood, and, you know, kind of every message of every movie or TV series or something is very, very preachy, you know, like kind of, you should do better. You shouldn't, this is how you should behave. You know, it's very... like, it's propaganda.
I don't know. I disagree only in the sense that I actually agree with you. I just think that it's not the last 10 years. It's always been like that. Hollywood has always been preachy. Movies have always been preachy. I remember my high school history teacher said, you know, during the Cold War, like, you know, the Soviets had propaganda and the West had entertainment. And you can see it in the movies, Rocky 3 or 4 or whatever, Rocky 4, you know, when he fought the Russians sort of thing. Like, it was just so... it's propaganda. I mean, all of those movies are propaganda. It's always been in there. It's just the era of the day. I think now there's more of a backlash to it. There's the anti, once again, in quotation marks, the anti-woke crowd who basically are just, they don't like the message that's being put forward now. Before, I think of generally the West was kind of unified behind one message sort of thing. And especially in America, the entertainment industry, it was always the, everyone has a fair go. You can, you know, there's the American dream. As long as you work hard, you can achieve anything. As long as you're good, you know, you do the right thing, good will come to you. You'll always succeed. We're the greatest. We're exceptional and all this sort of stuff. You know, you throw one American onto an alien planet that's under the control of an authoritarian leader, and within the end of the week, he'll start a revolution, depose the authoritarian and introduce democracy, which everyone will love. Even though they never heard this concept before, they will innately love this thing and they'll just know how to do it. You know, there's always that propaganda.
Yeah, there was always propaganda, I agree, but it was more kind of on a level of, like, you know, all the those like Rocky movies or James Bond movies or something, like bad guys were always Russians during the Cold War in the 90s. Then it became like Muslims always, like some terrorists. Some,
Middle Easterns.
Yeah. And then, you know, like, it's kind of as the political climate changes, the bad guy is the one that is currently, you know, considered the villain in the world. Yeah. But yeah, that's also, you know, subtle propaganda and kind of feeding people the information that, okay, everyone
not
from
always
this,
that subtle, but
well,
yeah,
that everyone from this part of the world or something is, you know, an enemy or whatever. But I'm saying, like, now it's also preaching on like a personal level. It's kind of like, you shouldn't, I don't know, eat meat or this or that, you know, like, but... yeah, but in general, I don't think that any of that has any place in entertainment. Just let me start there. I think entertainment should never have a message, but, you know, a lecture.
Ooh.
It should not have.
No,
a
but
lecture.
I think it should always have a message, because that's
no,
all,
no.
That's
should
all
have a message,
story.
But it shouldn't have a lecture. Like, you shouldn't kind of. You, it's okay to broaden someone's like horizons and to, you know, make something. Make people aware of something, or, you know, put like a like bring light to something or bring something to light, but not to lecture someone or to, you know, like try to fix them or something through. That's why I think, especially comedy, I don't like when comedy is preachy. I'm like, dude, tell us a joke. You know what I mean? Like, don't, because even if someone is doing it, like Ricky Gervais keeps saying, you know, my on stage persona is not the real me, and all these jokes I do about, you know, like trans or kids or sick people or whatever, like the last special got a lot of backlash for jokes about like kids with cancer and whatever, you know, like he's like, that's not my real opinion, that's just a joke. And I get that, and that's why I don't get it as a preachy thing. But sometimes comedians, you can see a special where they go like, okay, if you support Trump, you dumb. And I'm like, well, you know, that's your opinion, but, you know, I don't support Trump or whatever. I don't care. But I'm just saying, like, I don't think it should be used as a platform to, you know, like, to lecture people or to set people on the right path or whatever.
Yeah. Well, for me, I think I'm okay with that, actually. I'm like, go for it. Just you know, own it. As in, like, because let's look at some of the great ones. George Carlin, for example, he was a preachy guy, you know. Bill Hicks, preachy as well. You, even Chris Rock can, you know, he takes on the preacher persona in a way. You know, he preaches, you know, I preach the truth, you know. Not going to lie, not going to lie, you know, telling the truth, blah, blah, blah. They all have a certain amount, and sometimes that's actually appealing. I mean, look at Daniel Sloss. He's now like probably the new young upcomer. Well, now he's kind of becoming more established. But you know, he's releasing beats. He gets a lot of appraisal and a lot of applaud, a lot of accolades for basically standing up for certain issues and rights and joking about it and doing it on stage and you know against things like assault and stuff like that. You know, and he's not afraid to put his face on it, you know what I mean? To put his name on it and name stuff. Like, you know, apparently he's quite anti-Russell Brand at the moment. Like he's kind of not afraid to mention names in that regard, whether it's warranted or not. But the point is, I just think there's all kinds, like, you know, there's different kinds of entertainment, but we got to recognize for what it is. And if you do that style, then you've got to be, you know, just aware of what's there's possible backlash. But I'm pretty sure Daniel Sloss knows exactly what he's doing, and he knows that some people might disagree with him, and he feels justified to say, well, I don't give a shit. I think that I'm right, and I want my message to be presented. Like, I want to give my opinion on this topic because it's right, in his opinion at least, but, you know, that's what I think. So I think there's different kinds. We can have all sorts, and just it's up to us, the viewer, or you, the viewer, the listener, when you watch comedy, to decide whether you want to watch it or not. And if you don't, there's that stop button on the little player or whatever.
Oh, yeah. Or if you're at a live show and something doesn't sit well with you, you can, of course, always stand up and leave. And if you paid for the show, I don't know about, like, I can't speak for all the clubs and producers in the world, but on my shows, approach me after the show and say, like, oh, I really didn't enjoy that. Can I get my money back? I'll pay you back your money because, you know, it wasn't a service fully delivered, and that's it. No problem. But I mean,
yeah.
Okay, another question. So since kind of 20, as we mentioned, the pandemic, and since 2020, last like 3-4 years, you know, every month there is some kind of new horrible thing happening somewhere in the world. You know, there is a new war, there is a new natural disaster, there is something popping up somewhere, and basically a lot of people would say, like, the world is going to shit, kind of, you know. The world is in flames. Do you think that A, it's the world is too sad and too, you know, horrible to kind of to joke about it? So I mean, the kind of the harder it becomes and the more kind of problems appear, it's worse for comedy? Or you think, like, yes, great, more chance to joke about it, more things to flip into.
Come on, Trump, win the next election. Come on, well, daddy needs more material.
I mean, the last last one he won, 2016 or something? Was it 2016? Yeah. And I remember a lot of, like, Netflix specials that came out in 2017 or whatever, including Bill Burr and stuff. First 20 minutes is just Trump this, Hillary that, Trump this, Hillary that. So I mean, I'm sure a lot of people are basically keeping their fingers crossed for that, because it's, oh great, it's 30 minutes of my next special that Netflix will pay like $50 million or whatever, what kind of money they get for that shit. So surely someone is, you know, praying for that to happen. But I mean, like, would you say that the worst things are becoming, it's
every Trump impersonator. Sorry, I just had to. Well, every Trump impersonator, fingers crossed.
As well. But yeah, so would you say that for us, for comedians, for stand-up in general, the more shit is going down, the worse? Because, you know, it's kind of harder and harder to find something funny and positive and good. Or do you think, like, okay, great, you know, the world will burn, but we'll laugh about it?
Yeah. Well, okay. So to go back to that, to the COVID thing, like, I remember when I started doing it, my uncle was very supportive of me doing the stand-up comedy, and was basically saying, like, you're providing a great service. The world needs you now, needs people like you. You and your friends are providing a great service, you know, sort of thing. And he really saw it as that we were doing, like, all our, like, online. When I said, oh, we're not going to stop, we're going to do online shows now, everything's going to be online. He's like, great, because people need to laugh. We need to kind of vent. And I think that's kind of like the pressure valve that comedy can provide. Can it save the world in the sense of, can it resolve issues? Hell no, absolutely not. Not one little bit, not at all. But we're a distraction. You know, we're a nice distraction. We're a pressure release valve. We're the thing that makes you chuckle. The question is, are you ready to chuckle or not? And there is nothing wrong if you're not. Maybe the issue is too personal, too close. Then I totally get it. But the thing is, it's there if you need it. That's, you know, you watch comedians doing topical things. And I do think that as... Is the world going to shit? Well, it's always been a bit shit. I think we've just had rose-tinted glasses a lot of the time. But yeah, it is particularly quiet. It does seem, yeah, you're right. It does seem like there's a lot of crap going on. However, we're here to kind of make fun of it if we can. Going back to my original point, can you actually make a joke out of it? And as you were saying, do you have the skill? But yeah, I think we kind of provide that because we're able to point it. Because my opinion... And, you know, they talk about there's things about like comedians see things a little bit differently or whatever. And I don't know if that's that true. Maybe. I don't know. But the way I see it is it's all bullshit. Like at the end of the day, like even like patriotism, the whole thing, all that crap, it's a lot of crap. Everything is man-made. Countries are not actually a natural thing. We created it as humans. We've created governments. We created borders. Borders shift. Borders move. For better, for worse, whatever. Africa is a perfect example of countries that were made by Europeans on long lines that are not natural at all. They're not based on the diaspora of the people. They're not based around tribes or ethnic groups. And they weren't. They were based around economic interests of European countries. And now Africa, because the countries have been there for so long, well, not for so long, but long enough, that it's very hard to change those borders. Now people have become patriotic to their country, even though technically their cultural group is split over three different countries. And it's like, well, why this one? It's all man-made. It's a load of crap. So, but at the same time, it's where you live. It's part of your cultural identity. People can be very sensitive about that sort of stuff. So I think for me, it's everything is game to be made fun of because it's not real. It's all just... It's in our head. We just agree on a what they call like a social contract. We all agree this is a border. This is where France is. This is where Germany is. You know, Germany wants to change that during the 40s and 30s and 40s. Yeah, they gave it a shot. It didn't work out. The rest of the world disagreed. Okay, right now we have another country we have a couple of places that are actually now disagreeing on borders and wanting to push. And the other ones are going, no, 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 that's not where it should be. And at the end of the day, it is all just... what we agree upon. And I think that's what some of these countries who are invading, that's what they're banking on. They know that if they create a new border and they just establish it and they use history to apparently back up their justification, then that becomes the new reality. They know that. The reality is basically what you can push and what people are willing to believe. And they're just hoping that people give up to the point where they just agree on it. Can we make fun of that? Sure we can. And can we provide levity? Can we maybe point out the bullshit that's behind it? Sure. But some people may not want to hear that. They'll say, no, no, no. My cultural group has a definite 100% status. And I'm not saying you don't, but I'm saying that no one does because it's all, you know, I think the my comedic perspective or my actual, not just comedic, but my reality is that we agree the world is the way it is. But if we all decided tomorrow that, you know, we won't have countries, we'll just have continents. Africa becomes one country, North America becomes one country, South Europe becomes one country, then so be it. That's what it would become. Those borders would disappear because we decide. But can we make fun of those little things? Yeah, some people are ready for it, some people are not. But I think we provide distraction. We provide maybe levity. We can provide people that feeling of, oh, I see it the way you do. Or I see it the way that comedian does. I see it like that person. Or, oh, you've put it in a way that now I can use it to make fun of. Like I love Ricky Gervais when he does the bit about being an atheist. And he says, as whatever religious group you are, let's just say you're Christian or you're Muslim or you're Hindu, whatever. Okay, Hindu's a bad example because they've got multiple gods. But let's say you're Jewish, you're Christian, or you're Muslim. It's like you believe in your God. And you think all the other ones aren't real. You think all the other ones are bullcrap. So really, you're an atheist when it comes to all the other religions, except for yours. Because I'm the exact same as you. I just have one more God that I'm an atheist towards. And that just happens to be yours. And the way that was explained, I was like, oh, yeah, that's a great way of explaining it to someone. You know, it's like, no disrespect, but the way you feel about those ones, like the way you feel about the Hindu gods, for example... or the gods of Asgard, the Norse gods, or the Greek gods, the way you feel about them, well, that's atheism towards them. And you just think that yours is right. I just think that I agree with you on those. I think you're absolutely 100% correct. And I feel the same way about yours. That's it. And I think that way of explaining it is what we can also, what some comedians can provide if they're good writers, like you were saying. Yeah. So that's basically my gist right there.
I see that point. And I what you mentioned about your uncle saying that during like COVID and lockdown and stuff, you know, we were providing a kind of a healthy service to people to keep them entertained, to keep them, you know, sane, to, you know, actually bring those things to light again, to address those things, but make jokes out of them and all of that. I agree with that. But would you then say that, yeah, we are heroes, you know, we are the not in a way, you know, like same
essential services, you know, nurses, doctors, comedians, trash collectors. That's the order it goes in, buddy.
Yeah, but we are also trash collectors. You should see my sets. A lot of trash in there. But
okay. Doctors, nurses, trash collectors, comedians. New order.
Yeah.
But actually, you know what? Let's put trash collectors at the top because I just think, one, they deserve it. And two, you know, people don't give them, because you imagine the amount of crap if they hadn't come and collected stuff, we would have been living in absolute pigsties. There would have been absolute, you know, unhygienic mess. So trash collectors first. Then let's put it down to the nurses because they really take care of the people on a regular, like minute by minute basis. Then the doctors who give their diagnosis and, you know, give out the medicine and the drugs, and then us comedians. Okay, that's the order.
Well, I mean, you're joking, but if we are actually looking at the kind of, you know, that we provide, let's say this exactly, we provide kind of comic relief, we provide stress relief, we provide laughter, we provide mental sanity, you know, and mental health services, let's call them like that.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So in a way, you know, same as you can, like your leg hurts, you will, or your head hurts, you will have a painkiller. Okay. You're kind of down or depressed or sad and you laugh, you feel better. Right? So in a way, you could argue, or someone could argue, that yes, we are heroes, you know, we are therapeutic.
But no one will, because of the injustice of the world.
Yeah.
No, but we are not getting our accolades. We're not getting our special government paychecks.
Yeah, but I mean,
it's unfair.
I'll be honest with you. It happened to me a few times, not a lot. And I don't feel
government paychecks, motherfucker? What?
No, that never happened. But no, I mean, like, it happened to me several times, maybe in the last 10 years that I've been doing stand-up, almost full 10 years, maybe three times from the top of my head. So I'm not, you know, saying that after every show, someone comes to me and says, oh my God, you saved my life. No, but at least like two or three times, people have come up to me after the show or a few months later and told me like, hey man, like I came to some of your shows. It was a really rough period for me because of some personal drama or something that was going on in the world, like the pandemic or whatever. And I just kept coming to the shows and I felt this kind of sense of, yes, laughter, but not only, you know, like community, and that we all agree on this thing and we can all laugh about it. So maybe it's not that bad. Or, you know, that I just came really kind of bummed out and blue and, let's say, sad or depressed, but I laughed for 2 hours and then I, you know, just felt much better. And this was like a rock was lifted off my chest and stuff like this. So 2-3 times people have told me this. And I even heard it. I heard it once.
Did they touch your feet and kiss it as well? And like wash your feet? Did they offer to wash your feet? Oh, great Messiah and Savior.
Yes. But those two, they happened at the same time, but they were not related to each other.
Oh, okay.
So it was just a coincidence that,
just a pervert.
Yeah.
Just a regular
foot fetishist pervert who also likes comedy. But, yeah, and actually once someone told me the same thing about this podcast, believe it or not. Someone told me like,
what?
Yeah, someone told me like, I listened to this podcast. It was more about the comedy thing. Like I was doing comedy for several years. I wasn't sure, do I want to do it more? Because I felt like I'm wasting my time and it's not leading anywhere, blah, blah, blah. Mm. And then I listened to the podcast and like, I kind of got different perspective on whatever. So I kept doing it and I'm happy I did. So, you know, I'm not saying like we saved anyone's life, but I'm saying that, you know, maybe we're doing something good in the world, you know? So I wouldn't say like necessarily, I wouldn't call us heroes, but you know, but that's what I think entertainment should be doing. And that's why I don't like when it becomes preachy and it becomes too, you know, like heavy and stuff, because I think entertainment should be fun. That's the word entertained means I've had fun, right? And I think us as comedians, we should be primarily clowns, you know, we're jesters. Mm-hmm. We're here for your pleasure, basically. So that's why, you know, whatever kind of, and I think I talked about it when we talked about this kind of like arts and crafts and all this different stuff. You know, when I go to a club and the DJ is playing music that obviously only he likes because he's playing music for himself, I'm like, dude, go fuck yourself. Play that shit in your own bedroom, you fucking loser. We came here to have fun and dance and enjoy ourselves. Play the stuff that people want to listen to, or that they came out to listen
Enya.
To.
Yeah, more Enya.
Yeah.
More Enya. More Enya. Everyone loves Enya.
Just Enya. All the remixes and all the kind of Enya on repeat. So that's what I think the kind of purpose of comedy and entertainment should be. And that's why I think we are doing a good thing. We are providing a positive service in the world, I would say. But as long as we keep it kind of fun and light.
We keep it funny? Is that the key? So, we keep it funny?
Wait. Are we saying that... Wait, mind blown. Are you saying the key to comedy is being funny?
Shit. Oh, crap. We've been doing it all wrong, man. We've been doing it wrong.
We have to go back to square one, delete all these like 50 episodes we've done, and start this whole thing from scratch, because we have we've hit the gold mine of comedy. Try to be funny. That's
absolutely
all right. So now that we've learned our lesson, and I think that we can wrap it up.
Thank you for joining us on the journey, everyone. Thank you, listeners. It's been great. It's been a ride. I hope you're satisfied with the conclusion as we are. It's just beautiful. But okay, so maybe final thought, maybe not. I don't know. But just for a thought, okay. They say that comedy is tragedy plus time, right? That's the saying, right? That's what everyone can say. Comedy is just tragedy plus time. There it is, right? So is that what we're kind of saying? That it's just, you just need time until you can make it funny or until people are ready to laugh? Or like maybe, okay, so is it possible? Okay, let's say you have a bit about some conflict that's going on, right? You think you found the way to make it funny, all right? You've written a joke about it or about some traumatic thing that's going on in the world, some big disaster. You make some jokes, you got some quips, you've lined it up, you've got it written, you perform it on stage, bang, crowd does not laugh, or only one or two people laugh, you know, maybe some do, but some don't, some give you that look, some stand up, some walk out. Does that mean, but you know that some people laugh, so you're like, okay, so it's funny. Is the problem then, would you say, well, obviously they're just not ready for it. It's not enough time for them. Enough time for me, enough time for those that laugh, just not enough time for you. Like, the problem is not the joke. The problem is not necessarily the timing. It's more the timing for you individually compared to the timing of someone else. But if you gave it another 6 months or a year or maybe 5 years, you'll hear the same joke and all of a sudden you're going to piss your pants. Laughing, that is.
Hopefully laughing. But I mean, I think there is some truth to that, but I wouldn't say like tragedy plus time. I would say tragedy plus distance. And that distance can be temporal, but also it can be literally mental. Geographical or mental as well. Because, you know, if like 2002, you know, you are an American comedian somewhere in Texas and you're making jokes about Middle East, it's not personal for you. It's somewhere out there, right? It's like the war is happening somewhere there in Iraq or wherever, Afghanistan, whatever was going on back in the early 2000s. So it's somewhere way over there. So you don't really care about it. But then, you know, two planes crash into your skyscrapers. So if someone a week after that made jokes about that, that's personal. That was that hits literally too close.
Oh, you mean 2001 then?
Yeah, yeah. So that literally hits too close to home. That's the expression, you know. So I think it's distance. It can be temporal distance, because if we joke now about the Crusade Wars or something, let's make fun of that. That's funny.
Yeah.
But if we joke...
Napoleon, Charlemagne, Julius Caesar, Alexander the Great, you can make as many jokes about these guys. Genghis Khan. Genghis Khan can be hilarious if, of course, you know how to make it right. But let's face it, the guy did go around raping and pillaging a huge amount of the world, conquering it, destroying, raping, razing to the ground. Vikings. We can make fun of Vikings. They did that stuff.
Yep.
Yeah, actually, if you were... Yeah, at the time, I'm pretty sure if you went to the Normans or the Saxons or whoever the hell was in England at the time, and you were to make some Viking, oh, those crazy... They'd be like, dude, they literally just raped my sister like last week. Like, what the hell? How dare you make a joke about
that? And they're coming back.
And they killed my brother. Yeah, and they're coming back. They're right there on the hill. You go tell your joke. See how funny you are, Mr. Comedian Man.
Yeah, so I would say even mental distance, as you mentioned that the initial anecdote about, you know, joking about a breakup, and then when someone said, dude, you're not ready yet, you know, take some time, but also it's not just time, it's kind of mental detachment from what happened, and, you know, kind of getting over that and maturing and so on. So yeah, I would say tragedy plus distance, which can mean different things, potentially equals comedy. Potentially equals comedy, because I think even then, just doing like "haha, Genghis Khan" is still not funny unless you write an actual punchline or you write it kind of properly. So it's not just give it time and it's going to become funny. And that's why there is this, you know, thing kind of too soon in comedy and in kind of commenting on some current events as well, because, you know, might be too soon. I don't know, maybe not for everyone. Because someone can detach immediately from what just happened. And Ricky Gervais was telling this kind of story in the end of one of his specials, that on his mother's funeral, he was cracking jokes. And people were like some people were thinking, well, that's not very, you know, that's not in good taste, you know. But he said, she loved to laugh and she would want us to laugh and she lived a beautiful life. And I'm joking and I'm kind of respecting her through that. And I want us to laugh and to live our lives. To continue to live our lives. So maybe he didn't even need any time, right? Tragedy just happened, but he was already ready to make jokes and other people were ready to laugh. So I would say like tragedy plus distance equals comedy, brackets, sometimes.
Okay, so do you think then that comedy can maybe even help with that, bringing that distance closer? Like, can maybe that's part of Ricky's like a dealing coping mechanism, a way to create that kind of that distance was by using the humor, like the other way around. You don't have the distance yet, but you already start cracking the jokes in order to give yourself that kind of distance from it. The joke form allows you, or the way it's seeing it in a jokey manner, in a funny way, is a way of letting you detach yourself a little bit from that bad experience. Could it be that maybe comedy can help us to kind of give us perspective, or give us at least a different perspective that might be not so painful?
Yeah, I mean, if you can do that or take that, I mean, take that joke, then, because, you know, if I just broke up with someone, or I just lost a person, or, you know, something happened, and someone comes to me like 3 days later and goes, okay, I just broke up with a girlfriend. Someone comes 3 days later to me and says, oh, you know, but that bitch was that. I'm like, dude, no, like, you know, we're not together anymore. And maybe like something bad happened and we broke up, whatever. But still, I'm not ready to, you know, name call her or whatever, or to let other people trash her. And, you know, so that means, you know, it can create additional pain, actually, if you do it.
But what happens if the joke is not trashing, but it's like, okay, so let's say you're sitting down with a friend and the friend just looks at you and it's like, oh, you know, tough times. Like, yeah. And it's like, well, I knew it was never going to work out. And it's like, well, why? And it's like, well, dude, you're a Harry Potter fan and she was Star Wars. You know, it just makes a dumb little quip like that. Or, you know, you're afraid of spiders and she looks like a praying mantis. So, you know, it's not, you know, it's exactly right. It's not something that's serious. It's something dumb that you're just like, what the fuck? And it makes you laugh and then it makes you kind of go, ah, and sometimes you need that. Maybe that little bit of it's not done with malicious intent. The friend is just saying something stupid that just makes you just crack a laugh and just go, yeah, you know what? Life goes on.
I mean, I get it that you just like came up with this on the spot and it was just an example.
Yeah, stupid.
But I swear to God, if I broke up with someone or whatever, and someone came to me 2 days later and said, dude, come on, you had to know it will never work out. You're afraid of spiders and she has eight legs. I mean, that's fucking, no matter how hurt I am, I would laugh my ass off at that. But, you know, especially if she really had eight legs, that would be like, what a great pun.
Yeah. How did I not see that?
Yeah. I never noticed that. I loved her so much. You know, love is blind, they say. But of course. But, you know, if you say like, oh, because you loved Harry Potter and she loved Lord of the Rings and I go, oh yeah, she did. You know, it doesn't make me laugh. It just makes me kind of nostalgic, or, you know, like puts me in a sad mood again, then, because I think that's the, maybe we can end on this actually. I think, when is the time to do those jokes, or in front of like whom or whatever? That's for you to assess, like to properly assess.
Okay, but I got one more thing I wanted to ask you actually before we finish was, do you have you got any examples? Has anyone ever walked out of your shows because of one of your jokes?
I mean, I don't think they walked out. Yeah, people have stood up and left, but I don't think it's because of my jokes. I think it's simply because of the context of those jokes or the topics of those jokes. Not topics in the sense of like, you know, because a few years ago, maybe 2 years ago, there was this big scandal. It was like one week in the media. But here in Croatia, there is a Croatian comedian, and he's kind of like a blue comedian, right? So he does a lot of like edgy jokes and dark humor and stuff like that. And he was on stage doing his show, and he's been doing professional comedy for, I don't know, like 6, 7, 8 years, definitely. And it was just another one of his shows. And he was talking about rape. Like he was mentioning rape, and some girl got like, started shouting at him like, that's not funny. You cannot joke about that. And I don't know, did she say like myself or someone I know or whatever was raped, and I don't find that funny. And she kind of stormed out and kept shouting, and someone was recording this with the phone. They ended up on all the media and stuff, and he was, you know, kind of dragged through all the news headlines and stuff, comedian jokes about rape. But he didn't joke about rape. He didn't say, no, what's funny? Raping people. You know, he wasn't joking about rape. He was, it was, the topic was rape, but the joke wasn't, or the punchline wasn't anyone who's been raped. You know, like it was just... you know,
but yeah, but that's the point. So, it's just the topic itself can be triggering for some
people. But I don't even have jokes like that. Like if you've seen my show multiple times, and you know, like my stuff is very family friendly, I would say. You know, it's not even, I would say it's like what, maybe 13 plus at best 16 plus. It's not very like graphic, it's not very edgy, it's not, it's just something for something that everyone can laugh about. But then, you know, like if I say the word, you know, whatever, if I say the word Trump, but you really hate him, and that's why, you know, you will stand up and leave that show, not because I said something offensive, but just because I can't listen to anyone mentioning this man anymore, power to you, do it, why not? So I've had some people kind of stand up and leave due to the context of the what I was saying, but not because of the words I was saying or me being offensive to them or something like that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, you know, we were discussing before, like the fact that you know, we lived and we did stand-up comedy in Russia, like we've mentioned in the podcast before. And the fact is that now when I bring it up, like because I just had my first show outside of Russia since I've moved. I did it last weekend. And, you know, the thing was I had to, like when I brought it up, of course, because I had to mention like I had just moved here from here, and then I kind of had to kind of mention, because I had to watch the crowd, and there I could see a couple of faces, because there was this Polish girl in the audience, and she kind of wide-eyed, like, you know, the whole oh sort of thing. And then I kind of went, yeah, you know, but we've left it, you know, for reasons, and kind of just left it at that. But it was sort of like that thing where you kind of, I was a little bit concerned, because I do know that sometimes that can be, you know, especially since we are living in places where there have been a lot of people who have gotten away from that situation, especially maybe some Ukrainians or something like that could be in the audience. You know, it's sort of like you don't know what someone's political views are. And when you bring something up, that can cause a reaction. And I know like a couple little statements that I made, I had to, like, you know, people kind of gave me that look like, oh, really? And it's like, not what you're thinking. But, you know, it's that sort of, by just that alone of us having lived there can kind of make people go, why? Because they don't know what our background is or what our views are or how long we were there. When did we arrive? Why did we leave? You know?
Yeah, but I think that's also very, you know, like, I don't want to make this podcast in general, and especially this episode, too political. But I think if someone comes on stage and there is like a room with a lot of like Middle Eastern people in the room, right? Yeah. And he says, oh, I lived like 5 years in New York. I don't think all those
Israel.
People. Yeah, I don't think all those people should stand up and leave or be triggered, you know. But what Americans did there in the last like 20 years, I mean, let's not joke ourselves. Afghanistan, Iran, Iraq, Syria, it happened. Yeah. So, you know, and people don't go like, what, America? No. No, it's still like, yay, America, Avengers, Disneyland.
But it could depend on when it happens. Like if something has recently just happened, like in the last week or two, you might get some people just walking out going, you know what, I just don't want to deal with this today.
Yeah.
I just don't want to hear about it.
I'm saying like, fair enough. I'm just saying in general, I think like some things may be too personal and too close to specific people. And I think that's fine. Maybe there are some things that are very, sacred to me, you know, like maybe something is too personal for me, or, you know, I'm like, you should not joke about that, or you should not mention that in public, or you should not, you know, make that, especially make that a punchline of your joke. But that's something that I don't do. I've never talked about, you know, any kind of sensitive topics and made that a punchline, honestly. I made that a premise. Yeah. Like in this joke that I mentioned earlier about the pandemic, the punchline is not COVID, the pandemic that we were all going through and suffering. That's the whole point. I think like just the context of a joke is one thing and the butt of a joke is a different thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So basically, can comedy save? No. But we do provide a valve, an outlet, a way of de-stressing maybe if it's the right time for you. And also if the comedian is able to write a good joke. So if the comedian can write a good joke and present it well and you are ready for it, dear listener, then you can enjoy the show, whatever. But also at the same time, it's totally fine if you are triggered by something. It's understandable. You can always just get up and leave in that situation. And if you want, you can even talk to Igor after the show and complain to him and he could give you your money back. So, yeah, so it doesn't matter the show. If you walk out of a Ricky Gervais show and you're like, I didn't like that, just go to Igor, complain. He'll give you your money back. That's just what Igor does. He pays back no matter the comedian, no matter the event organizer. It just comes out of his pocket. It's what he does. He's a nice guy.
That is not factually true and I will not be paying you back for Ricky Gervais' shows. But yeah, I agree with your kind of conclusion and I would say, yep, in short, can comedy save? No, but we'll keep trying. Let's say it like that. Thank you.
Because we're an essential service.
Because we are an essential service, exactly. So thank you for listening. We've been The Comedy Kiosk. You can check us out on all the social media that we have. In addition to wherever you found this podcast, you can find us on Facebook, on Twitter, now X, on Instagram, etc. Mm-hmm. And you can suggest any topics you would like us to discuss, comment, and upvote and rate this podcast on whatever platform you're listening at, because it really helps us get more amazing listeners like you. Hope you enjoyed the episode.
And share with your friends.
To other like-minded people. Maybe not friends. Maybe you can share with your enemies. But just the important thing is just share.
Yeah.
So see you on the next one. I've been Igor Monday.
And I've been David Munoz.
And goodbye.
See you later.